All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's really a pleasure for me. Thank you, Ruth, for this wonderful invitation. And it's just, I'm delighted to see so many wonderful and dear colleagues and students and the postdocs and everyone here for this wonderful presentation. I want to accomplish three things. Just quickly in the last presentation, why is the U.S. border important for assuring health equity? So I think we have a very interesting story there to tell. So I hope that I can capture that story for you. Why is it important? And then assess the unique determinants of health that Dr. Giacello was mentioning, but really putting a social justice framework. And so I want to put that new concepts into research that I hope that is resonate with you. And some kind of interventions, which I think we've done a little bit, but with the concepts of social justice. Why the U.S.-Mexico border? There's several statements here that I want to tell you why we have to really take a new approach. Hispanics are the largest minority. The people that live in the border live in many worlds, perhaps two worlds we identify, but there are many worlds in those border environments. And the communities, as you know, Hispanics are very heterogeneous, so there really is a challenge there. But they're moving everywhere in the U.S. We know they're moving everywhere, right? And they contribute to the economy. Many are not appreciated, but they contribute tremendously to the economy. But many are invisible populations, like migrant workers, like temporary workers, unauthorized, bilingual, bicultural. There's a lot of invisibility there. But there are a lot of resilience and active participation as decision makers. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that and how it is important to understand that decision making. But they are very vulnerable. They have low education, many of our populations, low socioeconomic status, low social and economic capital, no wealth, which is really important. There's no wealth, but there is also a lot of wear and tear. So the question is, for how long can we continue to do that? We really need to understand that very carefully. So paradoxically, if you go to the border, there are large health systems in the border, yet large number of uninsured. A very, very, very sad situation. The border is very, very long, almost 2,000 miles, going from California to Matamoros. We know there are basically four states in the U.S., six states in Mexico, and they're combined to provide a very, very important picture. But I want to tell you some few things. I want to not bore you with a lot of epidemiological data, but a few things that I want to make some points. Health insurance, as we said, is not the only thing, health insurance, but boy, indeed. A lot of you look at the border residents, they are 40% uninsured, even more in El Paso and other communities. So we have a tremendous uninsured, underinsured population in our country, particularly in the border region as well, in spite of the fact that we have many health systems. But yet we have a burden of chronic conditions. I'm not going to talk about some of the other acute conditions, but the chronic conditions are really tremendous. We know the overweight and obesity in the border is much greater. We are getting, this is data from 2005, we're getting into the 40% in some of the studies that we've conducted and others in terms of obesity and overweight. If we look at diabetes, before they've talked about the burden of diabetes, the Pan American Health Organization has done a lot of projects and they have looked at the prevalence of diabetes. And it really looks more to the 15%. Some of the new data show that if you control for certain things, you might go to 30% in some of the communities. We have a tremendous burden of chronic diseases. We have less insurance. And yet we have a population growth, that these are projections in Texas, that are going to be growing tremendously. And as you all know, by the year 2050, in 2040, from 16%, we're going to go to much greater percentages in all of our communities. The Hispanic community is increasingly present in Texas. It's going to be, again, more than a lot of millions of people. More than 30% are going to be Hispanics or even more. And yet, you see the prevalence of diabetes is increasing in Texas, a much greater contribution to our Hispanic communities. And you wonder, what is it going to do, this combination of this burden? We then begin to look at some more data, more recent data, in some of the studies that have been conducted. We begin to see the same picture, that people in interventions, in randomized controlled trials, and in epidemiological studies, the people of the burden for chronic diseases is tremendous. We also know the metabolic syndrome and all the different disease states. We are beginning to see that you don't really have to go that far. And if you begin to do some epidemiological studies, you will find tremendous burden of chronic disease and comorbidities. I'm going to show you some new data. The use of medication is fascinating because in our communities, in the border, that component of medication is very, very exciting and very challenging because things have begun to change in Mexico, and so there's a lot of changes in the way that we address medications in Mexico and in the U.S. This is data from, most recent data from Cameron Country, if you go to Matamoros, where they have done a cohort study. This is just recently published in Preventing Chronic Disease. But what is interesting about this was done a study of 2,000 Mexican-Americans. And what really the interesting thing here is that close to 30% had more conditions like diabetes, hypercholesterolemia, hypertension. But then if you look at the weighted prevalence, they go to 30% diabetes, 30% hypertension, 48% hypercholesterolemia. More than half of the participants with diabetes were untreated. If you look at the underreporting of diabetes in the border, is tremendous. More than 35% approximately were untreated. Among those, probably 29 were insured. But we know were uninsured, had insurance. So a lot of them did not have insurance. And a lot of them had not the diabetes diagnosed. So they are not diagnosed with diabetes. They're underdiagnosed with high blood pressure. They're underdiagnosed with hypercholesterolemia. Some of them have tuberculosis. So you begin to see a trend that is pretty disturbing. And then you see the drugs in terms of the taking the diabetes, the medication. You see that a lot of to be appear Mexican origin. So a lot of people are trying to negotiate. But the fact of the matter is that there is a lot of complexity. And if one moves into some of these aspects of the border, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. So people are underinsured. People have a lot of comorbidities. People have a lot of challenges. They have to be a decision maker to make decisions. And I'm going to show you some data that shows about some of those decisions. So we need to really build a different framework for social determinants. And what is that framework will do? Well, that may need to get, for the first of all, if you think about research, we have to begin to look to contextualize projects. If we don't contextualize determinants of health, we're going to continue with the same old epidemiological research. We need to understand the social ecological determinants. And that's what we have done in the border. We're trying to really look at the epidemiology of border conditions in a different way so that we can begin to look at economic conditions, how people mobilize from Mexico to the U.S., from El Paso to Juarez and so forth. We need to look at issues of immigration. We need to look at these biopsychosocial factors. We need to understand fatalism, resilience, stigma, all the different elements, gender roles, acculturation. We are really not studying a lot of those elements. We are not studying a lot of the vulnerabilities and resiliences that our communities are really very much ingrained. So we need new studies that are going to look at some of this. So this was done by one of our, again, postdoc here, Dr. Lisa Leperos. She's a Latina working now at the University of Michigan. And she, with us at the Hispanic Health Disparity Center, published a study just recently to talk about these contextual factors. And so what is interesting about this is that transborder mobility is a fact. People, in spite of the violence and many things, that 30% are moving once a month from Juarez to El Paso. The non-mobilized respondents, is very interesting, have a very different profile. They have higher socioeconomic status. They are going to be associated with higher education. So they are going to travel less to Juarez. The people that mobilize to Juarez, they have fewer economic resources. That makes sense. They travel to Juarez for more things, right? They have yet similar levels of familism of pride. That means that this consumer, this individual, is trying to make decisions. Would I go to Mexico? Would I stay here? What should I do? So that they are going to be characterized by very unique conditions that make them, even in the border, to try to look for new opportunities. So it's very clear that border crossing is affecting a lot of our communities, and changes are happening in many ways. So we are also looking at comorbidities. So we tried to look at what are some of the factors that affect comorbidities. And we found that economic difficulties are still being very, very important. We find structural transportation problems within a border. We find many cognitive barriers like health literacy, not understanding well. And we find a lot of patient-provider problems. They feel discriminated. Even in the border, they feel discriminated. So what is social justice? What is really the key here to social justice? We really don't think that we have really embraced, but let me tell you that what is the new change of paradigm that we need to really look for. We need to start promoting systems of ethics that are a little bit more congruent with what the needs of data that we should look at. How do we facilitate translation and so that we end up not saying what this my grandma said, they're studying us, and they keep studying us, and they keep studying us, and nothing happens. Well, we believe that perhaps we need to really, and this is something that we've been involved in the last 5 years, it's been quite a challenge, but to try to look at ethical benchmarks. Not only to look at the scientific benchmarks, but look at ethical benchmarks and ethical evaluateness of fairness, equity, and ethical accountability, so that we can begin to start really questioning whether the research for addressing disparities is not only going from the scientific evidence, but for the ethical evidence. So we have been working on this, and we're almost there to publish some work. The community has not embraced this very well, but I think it's a little bit better now to try to really formulate what really are some of the things that we need to do. So in general, what interventions we need? We need the same, this is kind of the last, I think I thought 15 minutes, but it's going probably less than 15 minutes, but I'm going to wrap it up. The idea was that we need new paradigms of health equity, and then my last one, is that we need a new era of ethics, efficiency, and effectiveness. And we published an article in the American Journal of Public Health in December where we talk about this as in terms of community health workers, how this new era of ethics that we need. We need to make systems of healthcare more accessible, affordable, and accountable. And we need to do the ethics to really make that happen. We need to promote the awareness of appreciation of heterogeneity of our Hispanic communities. And then we need to have to kind of going down the system into policy, practice advocacy, research and evaluation, and we need integrations of systems for social change. If we don't do that, I think our paradigm of health equity are not going to be there. So basically, for concluding, final reflections. I think if you look at the border, if you look at what has happening in the border, it's going to happen everywhere in the U.S. One thing that the border is really an opportunity for these individuals to really adapt well. But even in the border, they are mistreated. Even in the border, there are a lot of health illiteracy. Even in the border, there are these paradigms of health services of health that are there, but they're not for our communities. So we need to understand some of those things. How to move forward, we need to integrate and define population health interventions using a variety of Hispanic subgroups, definitely. We have not yet understand the invisible populations like the farm workers, like the uninsured. There's many communities in El Paso that look like people are so afraid to go out. They can go out because they're very afraid of that they're going to be captured and they're going to be moved to Juarez. They need to address complexity. We need more complex epidemiological social research agendas. We need to move beyond assumptions that we think in the border exist into the fluidity, new dynamics, new systems of medications, because that's changing completely. We need to learn from resilience and these people that are very resilient. We need to understand the resiliency and how it works. But there is a lot of wear and tear in our communities. And it's not just that we just continue to just say the Hispanic paradox is really okay, and that we have to go beyond some of those assumptions. And we need to look and understand our social capital. When people come in and they don't do any capital and they don't have that wealth, and they have a lot of social capital to offer, and we are denying that, that's an important. And I think one of the last things is that we shouldn't make social justice a cliché, because now it's social determinants, now it's social justice. Shouldn't be a cliché, should be a reality that we really confront with understanding a much justice research and a much justice way of understanding some of our complex, because the border is looking in many places like that U.S. that we have with our Hispanic communities. Thank you.
Exactly. No te dije. Bueno, we have time for two questions directly for him, and then we're going to open it up for questions of the panel, but I'm going to ask the panelists to think of questions for each other, something that we don't normally get to do here. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question. I think that kind of border mobility is key. It almost makes the border like another country.
Yeah.
And given that, have you followed border policy and how that might affect health outcomes?
No, we haven't. But boy, that is just quite an amazing. Trying to follow border policy in terms of the movement of people is quite complicated. It really is, because it's just two countries with they don't really speak to each other in many ways. And some of that, there's some policies I haven't directly myself, our work, but there are policies that have looked at some of the kinds of restrictions they have made in Arizona for people, and how it has been very difficult and challenging for the undocumented and for the people. So there's a lot of those policies that are definitely there that are going to try to just mobilize people towards Mexico and try to make them really the scapegoats. So, but we haven't really followed some of those policies, because transborder mobility right now in the context of the border has been what? Is the violence that exists, and you don't want to go there, and that a lot of people that are coming in are the drug traffickers, right? And those are the stereotypes that we get about the border environment. So it's very difficult for sometimes to know, and very few people understand the transborder mobility of people that are going back and forth, in spite of some of those things. So some of those legislative agendas that are trying to cut some of that, to really continue to make the violence as the only thing that exists, and the drug trafficking as the only component, and yet denying some of these other things, is quite challenging. But I think it's very important that we follow policies and try to really address what has been the change. And I hope that some of those policies are not going to be very paternalistic, because that's always seen from a deficit model. So you see all these people coming in, and we're going to have to try to cut them. And when a lot of people that you know are people that are coming with their kids to try to bring them to school, you know, and so like you talk to the majority of people, they're trying to be consumers. They're trying to make the wise decisions. They are decision makers, and we haven't studied them well. They're trying to make the best decision of, should I stay here? Should I go there? Should I visit my mom? Should I buy medication? Should I buy foods and all those kinds of things. So
okay, thank you. Any other questions for Professor?
Yes.
It's sort of going off of that point. Can you speak a little bit about national engagement, so engaging our partners across the border, and how that's working, particularly within the context of data exchange? So exchanging some of these numbers, because I know oftentimes it can be difficult.
Yeah, sure. I mean, PAHO, Pan American Health Organization, is trying to be there to try to really facilitate some of that element. Unfortunately, so there's a lot of places in the border where the research is, the people are trying to mobilize that communication. Definitely, there are places, but there's not really an effort. If you think about, do I do border health? Well, in this crossing, but if I only study the health of the Latinos in the U.S. side, and not understand the state of Latinos or the Mexicans in the Mexico side, so then, but what we are seeing is that, for example, some of the policies that our universities have, we cannot go to Mexico to do research. So that's all, they don't allow us to go to Mexico to do research. And so some of those policies are clearly affecting a lot of the relationships. And sometimes people that want to come to meetings in El Paso, they say it took me 3 hours to come from Juarez to El Paso. It took me 3 hours. And they were asking me questions as if I was to be a person, like a drug person. And I'm just a person coming to UTEP, University of Texas, El Paso, to do my study. And they were asking me, and I waited 3 hours there. So there's just a lot of some of those things. Yes, there is an effort, but unfortunately right now it's hampered by some of those problems.
Professor Balcazar, you have the floor right now, so I'm going to give you the first opportunity to ask one of your other panelists a question, if you have one.
Well, I think, first of all, I'd like to praise what they're doing. No? And I just wanted to ask you, Deborah, in terms of, I think this issue of bringing Latinos
into the workforce, into the professional or the higher education, what is it going to take beyond, is it all education? Or is it something else? I mean, we're going to spend 2.7% of Hispanics, right, are in the and yet we have 16%. So what is it going to take? When do you expect to see this 2.7% change? Or is it going to go 2.2%?